The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 13th of May, 2020. On the podcast today, Jacqueline Danielle, Chief Executive Officer of Way Education. W-E-Y is ticker there. And Jacqueline discusses some of the highlights from their half-year results and explains how further growth is expected. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about how the coronavirus is affecting the markets and commodities, plus mentions Blue Rock Diamonds, BRD, ticker there. Plus, I have two lists for you, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked analysts. Oh, some new ones here today. It's been dominated by the COVID-19 index. In fact, we've got that there. Check it out, voxmarkets.com. There's a list and index of our stocks doing well or positioned to do well through this lockdown and in the fight against the virus, of course. The other list I'll be doing, of course, is top five most liked RNSs. And these are RNSs released today, last 24 hours. Most read, most liked. Check them both out. Top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jacqueline Danielle, CEO of Way Education. W-E-Y is the ticker there. Jackie, thanks for joining me.
Good to talk to you again, Justin.
Now, you've released a half-year report and some decent numbers there, some good growth, cash in the bank there. And before we get into the details and, you know, what's coming up, and at the moment, you know, everything's changed, but I suppose it's changed, you know, to the benefit of you guys, I suppose, at the moment, that everyone's been homeschooled and all that stuff. Before we get into all that, Jackie, for people not familiar, Way Education, just give us a breakdown as to what it's all about, please, if you could.
Yes. So Way operates two online education entities that deliver real-time online education to people's homes or wherever they happen to be. The two entities are slightly different. So we've got Inter High School, which is a mainstream, primarily secondary school, though it has the last years of primary as well. So from age 8 right the way through to sixth form, a standard independent school. Yeah. And then we also have Academy 21, which is what we call alternative provision. And that's for more vulnerable learners who may be behind with their learning or have been out of school for some time. So that's mainly to help other schools deliver their alternative provision to those vulnerable learners.
Okay, excellent stuff. All right, and this, now you've released your interim results for the 6 months to the 29th of February 2020. And it's odd, even though that's a couple of months back, the world has changed dramatically since the end of February. But nevertheless, let's go into, first of all, the results up to that time, because it's been a decent double-digit increase in revenue. Take us through some of the financial highlights, if you could, Jackie.
Yeah, I guess the first highlight is the financial performance on revenues. So again, in that first half, we've seen an increase in revenue across both entities. And if we compare it with the first half of last year, it's the same kind of shape, although we've managed to flatten out that bell curve. I've probably talked to you before about how our Academy 21 has a bell curve of revenue on, and that's sort of flattened out now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's looking good for the second half.
Yeah, 43%
in terms of revenue.
So it's all going strong, and you said you're cash in the bank. You got 6.6 million cash in the bank, which is it's a healthy cash balance, isn't it? And I suppose a lot of companies at the moment, you see at the moment, you know, because a lot of companies are shut down. You can still operate, of course, but you see a lot of companies, you know, rushing to raise money and stuff. So that gives you a lot of security there, doesn't it?
It does. We're under a certain amount of pressure to spend that cash, and we're certainly not going to need to raise money. We're always on the lookout and monitoring for potential acquisitions, but those acquisitions, if they happen, would be to add to our customer base. We've got all the technology that we want and need, so it's purely would be to add to customer base. But basically, we are using that cash and investing it in growing the business, which ultimately generates cash itself. So we're in that fortunate position, and so we are investing in growth.
And so looking back to the last 6 months operationally, what have been some of the achievements then, Jackie?
Well, we've done what we said we were going to do. So we have invested in our leadership capacity. We have a new director of education, Sarah De Freitas, very experienced in technology in higher education, and we're bringing that down into the secondary school space. We've also invested in our first director of marketing, Esther Clark, who's got a great deal of experience, not just in marketing, but marketing in the education sector. So very knowledgeable, underpinning all her strategy on things that she's achieved before. We also invested in the technology to deliver our new education model. I think it's important to say that in our ambition to educate tens of thousands of students rather than just thousands of students, we have to have an education model that's going to be able to benefit tens of thousands of students. So that model is borrowed sort of quite a lot of terminology from the higher education university sector, who of course are quite used to educating thousands of students. And the technology to deliver that model, we're investing in that. So we have a model that the technology changes at every stage of learning. So we have something called Learn, which is where you take on new information, and that technology is delivered in a what we call a lead lesson, so that's like a masterclass. Then we have the explore section, so that's what we call a follow lesson, and that's more about the teacher guiding, so that's more like a seminar with games and video and simulations and virtual labs and virtual field trips and trails and the like. Then comes what we call the apply, which you and I would know as where the child is applying this newly learnt knowledge and it's being tested out. So the teacher now is in mentor mode, so a different set of technology is being used, quizzes, assignments, research projects. And then finally, reflect. So that could be feedback, and it's collaborative, and that's where the teacher is using coaching technology. So you can see there's a whole range of technology and teaching mode and learner experience based on basically 15 years of teaching tens of thousands of students online and what works best. And of course, that's where we've got the advantage over those more recent newcomers to the space who are basically putting materials online.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's, since the period end, a lot of change. Everything's been locked down, people being homeschooled, of course, children. I mean, I've had experience with that, and it seems like it's been a baptism of fire for most for most schools, you know, having no framework, just jumping on maybe Google Class, whatever like that. And it's, you know, it's been very stressful. I mean, even for parents and for teachers alike. But have you had a lot more interest, you know, in the last couple of weeks, couple of months?
We have. I mean, quite naturally, we've seen quite a large spike in interest. And it'll be some time before we know how much of that interest converts into student enrolments. But I think it's important to say that it's all good, in the sense that it's brought online learning to the fore. And it does mean, looking at the research in America, there is evidence to suggest that it means that the acceptance of online learning and taking it on board has actually been brought forward by 5 years. So this whole COVID-19 and the pandemic, providers now, education providers of physical education, are now bringing their strategies forward by about 5 years. And they're really going back, they're really looking at, you know, post-COVID, having a blended approach and not going back entirely to bricks and mortar. And that's quite important, not just for COVID, but we know, I mean, we've been around 15 years, we've never had to have a global pandemic to produce a market for us. We know that, you know, the outcomes for schools can be better anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are finding that what was supposed to be temporary is gradually, you know, transforms into, you know, habit forming. And like I said, you know, people will probably start maybe using another example, using bikes to get to work rather than transport. And that will become a habit, you know. And yes, there's other kind of things like just working from home anyway. People just going online, using virtual spaces, like you said, and not using an office. So people's habits change, don't they? And accept these things. And like, online learning is definitely one of those areas, like you say, even if people don't go fully online again, there's an option there for a blended approach, isn't there? You know,
it's brought some familiarity to them. Yes, I mean, obviously what we provide is a lot different from what they're seeing. What they're seeing are curriculums being put online, and that's not quite how it works. So some of the things the schools are getting right is that they are communicating well with parents, but some of the things that they, you know, aren't getting right because they haven't had the experience of it is they're not using the technology properly or the right technology at the right time. They're taking curriculums and just putting them online. They haven't been designed to be delivered online. And so you see this huge drop off in engagement. And, you know, we can help schools with that. And that's what we've started to do. It's quite interesting.
I just want to say there, I mean, you know, is there, you know, a part of the business that can be used? I mean, does it for consultancy or to help bring, you know, schools online more?
I wouldn't call it consultancy. We have, as you know, a substantial B2B area of our business. So it's not just families and students that enroll. We have a whole area of our business that we support other schools in the UK and internationally. We call it supplementary provision. So where a school, for instance, wants to expand their timetable, but they either don't have the physical space or they don't have the qualified teachers, all sorts of reasons why schools can benefit by using Way Education to extend their school gates virtually, and more reasons now, of course. But you know, it doesn't take a global pandemic for them to realize that if they've got problems with infrastructure or if there's flooding, or we see all sorts of reasons why a school or a family are suddenly forced into a reason for looking for other ways of providing an education. So we're definitely seeing the benefit of that in terms of raising awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. And going forward, like I said, impressive growth here on the top line, and profitable as well. So can you keep achieving this kind of growth? Is it possible? And how are you going to do it?
Yes. Well, our original vision was to become the largest UK secondary school by student numbers and quality, and then to become the larger than any multi-academy trust. We've achieved the first part of our vision, so we're educating thousands of students now rather than hundreds, and we're very much focused on the second part of our vision, which is about tens of thousands of students. And to do that, we devised a strategy, Waypoint 2.0, as we call it, which is a strategy for accelerated growth. And what you're seeing in this first half is the start of the beginning of that strategy being implemented and coming to fruition. So the growth that we see is from increased student registrations, increased student enrollments. We had a good start to the year. We've also had increase in conversions. So those that are trying it out for half a term, something like 90% of those now are carrying on. The largest growth has been in the UK, but there's substantial growth in other territories, and the UAE is one of those significant ones. And then going to our B2B market, we've seen new business activity. So we've increased our coverage in the UK in local authority areas by nearly 30%. We've also seen growth in our key accounts. So our top five existing accounts have all increased by some, 130%. And that's really as a result of investment and expansion in our sales team last year. We're still seeing the benefit of that. And particularly as they've rolled out their account management practice, which is why you're seeing these key accounts growing so well. So that part of marketing has really worked well for us.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, Jackie. Well, it sounds like it's all going well. And if people are liking the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, then, as always, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, number one. Well, as I said, we've got a strategy for accelerated growth, and we're in the first year of that strategy. And the first half has shown that that strategy is being implemented and is working. Reason number two. We will see the benefit of this going into the second half, and that will complete the first year of the strategy for accelerated growth. So that's a reason to follow us. And the third and final reason is that this is a strategy, as I said, for accelerated growth. So we're looking to educate tens of thousands of students and not just hundreds or thousands. So that's an exciting time, and it really means that particularly now, as online learning is becoming a familiar term, an acceptable term, people are accepting that online provision can work just as well as physical provision. And I don't think that we will ever go back to relying on just physical bricks and mortar.
Excellent stuff. Jackie, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Stocks are having a bit of a sell-off. What's the worry today? Is if we haven't got enough worries? I mean, to be honest, you know, after the initial massive capitulation in March, they've been sort of grinding a bit higher. You know, technically oversold. I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying the stock market is not reflecting the real economy, and there's a big fallout yet to come. But they're having a bit of a sell-off today. What's your thoughts?
Well, we've always been concerned that there could be a second wave of coronavirus, and the gold price has ticked up, and we can see investors have gone a little bit more cautious on the market. There's undoubtedly a little bit of profit taking, probably by hedge funds just reducing their risk. If you recall, when the coronavirus first started to hit the West, there was an enormous, the oil price collapsed, and then the oil-rich sovereign wealth funds dumped all their liquid stock into the market, and that created a pretty unprecedented buying opportunity at that time. And everybody thought, well, the whole financial system could collapse because there's so little market making in New York, for example, and prices were just winding down and down and down because all the professional buyers were standing back. So we've had quite a lot of recovery since then, which is good, and it shows that the sky hasn't fallen on our heads and the world continues to operate one way or another. But Western nations are racing to reopen and ease their lockdowns, and I think that's partly driven by competition from China, which is reopening very strongly at the moment. Sales of diggers, as in construction machinery, rose 60% in April in China, and that's a major rise compared to March. That is, though, we think that's year on year. We think that's a big catch up number, in effect. So, I mean, you're effectively rolling probably some sales from February and March into the April number, which is why it's so big. But it's still a really big number. It says that the Chinese government is massively stimulating construction activity in China. We know that they are making it much easier for people to get hold of land to build apartment blocks for small and medium-sized units. And we are pretty sure that the Chinese government are pushing ahead on their bigger infrastructure projects, their versions of HS2, which probably make HS2 look like a small commuter line, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you've got to see, you know, people are worried about a second wave. Well, let's look at the evidence. We've got a very contagious new virus, novel virus out there. We've had lockdown. We're slightly lifting the lockdown. A lot of countries are. And yet we don't have a vaccine. So I think the worries are justified to a certain extent because, let's be honest, we soon change our mind. Even though we've been told about social distancing and all this stuff, I've just seen a shot from Sky News, London bus, and literally jam-packed the rafters, people getting off. And I'd say, it's UK, I suppose, so, you know, people don't want to wear a mask. I'd say about 20-30% are wearing a mask, even though it helps on public transport. But that shows you how quick people are going back to, or not even worrying about it, you know? And I think I think it's essentially is going to blow up again, because we haven't got a vaccine, full stop, you know?
Well, images of London buses full of commuters without wearing masks is not good. And if you're on a bus like that, you probably want to wear a mask with some sort of, with a proper barrier involved. And that kind of thing is going to create a second wave. So in China, they're very good at strictly controlling what the population does. Over here in the West, our politicians tend to be a bit more polite about the way they ask, or maybe they impose some fines. And I think the government is going to have to do more about this, because you just can't have everybody rushing to jump on the bus. You're going to have to make sure that the bus driver limits the number of people that are allowed to get on, which is going to create a huge problem for all those people who are very keen and in many cases desperate to get back to work and start reopening their businesses.
Yeah, but there's no way, is it, that, you know, like I say, on the tube and stuff like that, that it won't be spread, I don't know. How can you stop it spreading on the tube, on buses? In London, especially, in the big cities, there's no way you can stop it spreading, because people can't drive into central London to work and park their car up. You know, there's public transport is needed to work. I don't see how it's going to work. I don't see how we can prevent the spread when people are sharing really small spaces, you know?
So, well, as a committed cyclist who cycles to work every day in normal situations, I think that's a great way to get around, and clearly Boris Johnson thinks that as well. And London is a great city for walking and cycling in, but that's not practical for everybody. The double whammy of walking and cycling is that you get fit at the same time, and so there is extra reason for doing it with the coronavirus running around. But again, it's not practical for everyone. But the more people who can manage that, the less crowding there will be on the public transport, and that would be good for everyone. Having said that, you're still not entirely safe if you're walking and cycling, because you need to keep away from other walkers and other cyclists to some degree. So it's a bit of an impossible problem in a very crowded city.
Yeah, cool. Anything happening else there, John?
Well, I mean, gold prices clearly rising on the back of this concern for a second wave. So gold stocks doing well, because gold stocks are having a great time in terms of increasing margins, because local currencies have gone down in just about every country where they work. Oil prices have gone down a lot, and gold prices have gone up, so the margin improvement is huge. On the flip side of that, if you're in the diamond industry, it's very hard to sell diamonds at the moment, because international buyers can't fly around the world very easily at the moment, and they're not. Almost all the diamond sales are closed anyway. Those markets will reopen, and we see that there's a little company, Blue Rock Diamonds, where we're Nomad and Broker, report today that they've done a deal with a group in Antwerp, so they can not only sell their diamonds into Antwerp at hopefully higher prices, but also they can forward finance those diamonds. So they will get, for every diamond they produce, they'll get 70% of its estimated value, and they can get that up front, and then they can pick and choose when they want to actually sell those diamonds into the market. And that enables the company to get back to work. It got back to work on Monday, I believe, and get things up and running again. So good management, well done. Great effort on behalf of shareholders there.
Diamonds. Who is buying diamonds in this market, though? It's like, you know, what is, you know, the commodity of... Is anyone, you know, what's in demand at the moment? What is in demand?
Well, look, diamonds are not in demand today only because of the problems buying them. But actually, what we saw at the end of the global financial crisis, which was the subprime crisis in the United States, in reality, that actually demand for diamonds and people getting married took off after the crisis. And I think we'll see a bigger lift after the coronavirus when this is all said and done and the jewelry stores reopen. Although you can buy diamonds online very easily these days. So I think we'll continue to see the shift to online because it's not that hard to choose something like that online. And I think people will be wanting to express their love and commitment for their partners going forward. So I'm quite hopeful for that market. On the other side, we're also seeing electric vehicle sales holding up remarkably well. EV registrations in Europe rose 57% in the first quarter. So that's a good result. And let's face it, when we all come back from, you know, when the world returns to normal, there's going to be quite a lot of people still getting over the pneumonia that they got from the coronavirus. And I think air quality is going to become an increasingly urgent issue to deal with.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that they've opened back up. You know, you can now, you know, go and look at houses. You can shop houses and go online and all that stuff and do some house moving. And I think there will be maybe... a trend to head out of the cities, you know, because, like I said, it's a bit worrying, isn't it, for people, you know, being close to people all the time, especially when we haven't got a vaccine. And like I said, we're not going to get a vaccine. I think Melinda Gates said yesterday, Bill Gates' wife said, if we're lucky, we may get a vaccine by the end of this year. And I think that's very optimistic. I've seen most people say it's going to take 12, 18 months, you know, so life will change, you know. I mean, like I said, when you say back to normal, I think it'll be a new normal, you know, because, like I said, you're working from home, I'm working from home. How many companies are going to just carry on doing that, you know?
Well, look, we're lucky in that we're doing conference calls with a lot of companies. We know them really well. You know, because we've got that long history with these guys, it's quite easy to do a call. And you know the measure of the person you're talking to because you've met them so many times. It's much harder for... You know, if you're starting off with some new people that you've never come across before, then that's difficult. So, but for now, there's certainly enough established businesses to talk to and to work with for us. But it does. I think it will stifle new business going forwards to some degree, where you really need to have meetings and establish that more of a personal connection. And I think that will come as rules get eased. We will be going back into the offices probably on an ad hoc basis and social distancing and then using lots of hand gel and other disinfectants to ensure that we're relatively safe.
Don't drink it, though. Don't drink disinfectant, as Trump suggested. And didn't you say that some other countries are drinking, is it methanol or something?
Yeah, in Iran, there's 700 people have died from drinking methanol, apparently, and somebody seemed to think this was a good idea. And I'm sure they weren't taking Trump's advice. So maybe somebody else was promoting the idea, but
Darwinism, though, isn't it? Really, you know, it's you know, survival fitness is if they're that stupid, they're not meant to be here. Really, let's be honest. I mean, they shouldn't be having kids, those people, because they just pass on that idiocy to their children. And so it's lucky they survived this long. And I don't regard any death as like, but how can they, even if it survived? When they're thinking that drinking that kind of stuff will clear insides out. So that's just, I suppose they're ill-educated, is it? How do the people even think of that?
Well, look, a fair number of people who die in Russia every year because they're drinking homemade alcohol or vodka. And in fact, they've distilled methanol rather than alcohol. So... It's an extremely serious thing, and this is why alcohol quality has to be regulated and monitored. And you shouldn't buy anything that is homebrew, if you see what I mean, because the risks are terrible. And even methanol on the skin will pass through the skin. and you'll go blind and probably die because it's cumulative. It's the body. I don't believe the body can clean it out. It's a bit like mercury poisoning in that respect. So definitely something to stay away from.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Marvellous, John. Any other thoughts? Anything else going on?
I think the gold sector is certainly going to have a great time for now. Some wonderful companies in that space. Looking forward to hearing news of Scott Gold getting back on track, which will be interesting. We've published a list of interesting gold companies recently. Certainly a lot there to work with.
Okay. Yes. I think gold is. Sooner or later, I think gold is going to go nuts. I think it's going to really rally strongly. I don't know when, but hard to time it. But I think always have a little bit of gold in your portfolio, even though I haven't.
I mean, and then the other thing is, especially with electric vehicle sales doing so well, and the China is importing more rare earths than ever before. So I think these, at some point, these rare earth companies, which are really undervalued, companies like Macango, Rainbow Rare Earths, Pensana, and there are a few more. The commodity that they produce, I think, it simply has to go up in value because it's so critical for electric vehicles. And then at some point, I'm sure the lithium companies will go better because there's such enormous expansion of battery facilities. And we were talking to Talga Resources, which is an ASX listed company, on Monday, and they say they've got indicated orders for more than they can produce over the next few years. So, and this is for their graphite anode. So they don't see any slowdown in the investment process and the construction process for these new battery factories. And there's going to be a lot of new battery capacity built in Europe because it's the EU is going to require a lot of local content within the new EVs to be made by Mercedes and Volkswagen and all the other major manufacturers. So this getting the raw materials in is going to be a big thing for these companies, and it's not something they can quite, they can't control the pricing of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous. Thanks, John. We'll speak you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Velocis. In fact, just below that is Purple Bricks, of course, is a they're opening up the housing market today, so that's a benefactor of that, up 14%. But Velocis, down 11.7%. VLS is ticker there at 3.356 pence. At four, Synergen, down 5.83% to 56.5 pence, SNG. At three, Non-Standard Finance, that's down 5% at 13 pence. At two, Hemogenics, down 1.1 to 8.5 pence. And at one, it's Nexus Global. And it's down 22.7% to 4.25 pence. It was a big riser yesterday, I think. 40%, I think. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Hemogenics. Final results out for those. At four, Oxford Biomedica. OXB receives approval for first two Oxbox suites. IQAI Limited, IB Software, features an award-winning article. Woo! Get you! At two, Motive Bio, Holdings and Company. Don't know what that's like. And at one, Predator Oil and Gas, Pilot Enhanced Oil Recovery, Onshore Trinidad. All right, that's it for the list there. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.